It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. It's kind of like a pregame, if you will, for Quinnipiac. Did I say it right, Quinnipiac?
Quinnipiac.
All right, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
Not a whole lot. On my way to Greenville, fired up, ready to watch Pirate baseball.
I know, very excited as the Pirates are going on tonight. And as we record, it's the beginning of the Campbell NC State game. So we'll find out who the winner is in late afternoon. We'll know who won that game. And what I wanted to do, Bubba, is we have, by the way, let's introduce, we've got two great guests coming up in this preview as well for Quinnipiac. So let's talk about them, and then we'll get back. We'll do our preview of the game.
Yeah, we'll be catching up with Trent Britt. Trent, someone that most people in Greenville probably know, or at least know of. Trent owns, along with his wife, family business there with Next Level Training Center. They do an excellent job. That's actually where Bryant Packard got a lot of his development coming up. And then also we caught up with Corey Scott, one of the premier closers, or really the premier closer, right there with Seth Simmons, Shane Matthews, some of the guys like that, Drew Reynolds. Those are some of the names you think of when you think of some of the top closers in Pirate history.
And we're going to, the two of them, we'll have them in just a little while. What we'll do now is kind of paint a picture for this weekend that we've already had, by the way. Check out, thank you so much, folks, our practice report that we did yesterday, and also our Greenville regional preview that we had. We released late afternoon yesterday. Appreciate you guys very much for all the listens, and the podcast is growing. So our biggest month we've had so far this year, and one of the highest we've ever had. So thank you so much for that. Bubba, I want to talk about the game. Obviously, we don't it's in progress or getting ready. First pitch is about right now for Campbell and NC State. So obviously, we're going to focus on the Pirates and Quinnipiac. And I think right now, you're looking at a situation with the Pirates where let me give you my breakdown, okay, between the four schools. And I've been thinking about this series. Let's talk about the two that we are going to have tonight at 6 o'clock, the number one seed East Carolina and number four seed Quinnipiac. And I'll take the visitors first. Here's what, here's the way I feel. John Delaney, former player who took over the program a handful of years ago, has done a nice job rebuilding this program, right? He, we talked about that on the interview with him. 2016-2017, tied for eighth place in the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference. And then last year, they finished second. They bowed after that game. I can't remember if it was Marist or Monmouth, but they'll come to me in just a second. But anyway, they finished second in the tournament last year. They were in center field. The team met, and they were determined to be the champion this year. For my personal opinion, they are East Carolina is not overlooking them, but I think they're happy to be here. I think they've met a goal that they wanted to do, and that is they haven't been into a regional in, 14 years. This program is for Quinnipiac is heading in the right direction. The Bobcats now can say they're champions of their conference tournament. They've met a regional. Take the Pirates. They have a lot to lose. They were on the bubble of having a national seed. Unfortunately, they didn't get it. They get a 10 seed. They're the host of a regional the second year in a row, the first time in program history, Clark LeClair Stadium. They've had that. They've done a lot of stuff. They didn't win the conference tournament, but the first time ever went into regular season in American for baseball. They've checked a lot of boxes off. And so where I'm coming from, Bubba, tonight with the 1-4 seed is this would be David versus Goliath kind of thing, because you look at with them, with the Pirates, they've got a ton to lose, right?
Well, I guess you could say that. I mean, but I definitely not so much even worried about that. I mean, we're coming out expecting to win a regional. I mean, that starts with beating Quinnipiac. I mean, Quinnipiac is obviously the hunter. I mean, they're someone right. that I mean, no, besides themselves, nobody's expecting them to come into this regional and be in contention to win it. So it's a great opportunity for Coach Delaney and that program.
And exactly. And nobody's over. Let me make it very clear. Nobody in the Pirate program is overlooking the Bobcats. They're a quality team, and they're a team that could beat East Carolina if East Carolina does not play their best game. Now, the other two teams with are more evenly matched. I think that with NC State and Campbell, it's hard to say who's going to win that game. It could go either way. I think with the talent is a lot more even, and we'll have to wait and see how that turns out. And we'll obviously, I want to remind you folks, by the way, that we're going to have a special post-game show, Extra Innings, tonight after the game that we're talking about right now. So we're doing kind of a preview of the game, and then we'll have a post later on this evening, and we'll have it out for you as soon as possible after the game. So I wanted to remind folks to promote that.
I was going to say, on Extra Innings, wrapping up the Quinnipiac game, we'll be joined by former Pirates center fielder and leadoff man from the 2001 Super Regional team, one of the best teams in East Carolina baseball history, Warren Gaspar. So Warren Gaspar will join us, and we'll take a look back at the Pirates and the Bobcats.
It's going to be a great time, and cannot wait for that. It'll be a tremendous experience tonight. I'm looking forward to it, and I think we're going to have another special guest, right, Bubba? Stu Murray?
Yeah, Stu Murray from On Campus to the Cape. Stu made it down several weeks ago for the UConn series, or actually just one game, because he also went to Boschmer Stadium to watch the Tar Heels in Boston College. But Stu was there for that, I guess it was a Thursday night game, and the first game of that series, when Jake Agnos was just lights out. And Stu was very impressed with our environment. It was his first trip to Clark LeClair, so he's been really looking forward to seeing what this regional atmosphere at ECU is going to be about.
And we're looking forward to that. So, folks, make sure that you definitely listen after the game. So you can kind of have like a – it's kind of like a post-game show, if you will. And we'll have that for you tonight. And we'll try to do that as much as possible, schedule permitting, because we have the guest. We have to line them up, obviously. And we have three co-hosts that have a life and have a schedule. So we'll try to do it as best. We don't want to make any promises we can't keep. Bub, I know one thing I can't promise you. I know the game is tonight at 6 o'clock with the Pirates and Bobcats. And do you want to go down a little bit about your thoughts on the game?
I think the Pirates will come out determined to take care of business. I really do, after the way things went down in Clearwater. And guys have talked about the way practice has gone the last few days and just how it's been more like a fall practice, much more involved, I guess you could say, or more grinding even than you'd have during the season. Just making sure that we're right and where we need to be to come out like we did in 2016 after the disappointing showing in Clearwater when we went up to Charlottesville and stunned or took care of business against Bryant, and then stunned defending national champion UVA, and then won the regional against William and Mary.
Now I can still hear Corey Gore's call on that game. That's one of the best college baseball calls I've ever heard. That was right on the money, and Corey does an excellent job of that for sure.
Yeah, Corey does an excellent job. That's what I remember Coach Godwin giving Corey a tough time because of his voice cracking during that call of Travis Watkins' home run.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have that one saved on my SoundCloud under my favorites, and probably here in a few minutes after we finish recording this podcast, I'm going to go back and listen to some of those top calls that Corey Glore had from this year and then 2016 as well.
Absolutely. Do you want to go to our first guest?
Yeah, let's first talk to Corey Scott. Corey pitched for the Pirates in 99 and 2000, a pair of number one seeds those years down in Baton Rouge and Louisiana Lafayette. He led the nation in saves. And let's catch up with one of the best relief pitchers in East Carolina baseball history, Corey Scott.
Bubba, we're very excited about baseball season. Obviously, Pirates have a big regional this weekend, and a man that knows a lot about regionals and, in my opinion, in the modern era, really set kind of a pioneer, set the way, the bar, if you will, for this program.
Yeah, Dave, really the most successful era of Pirate baseball was from 99 to 2001, the Pirates earned three consecutive number one seeds, and for the 99 and 2000 season, one of the top relief options, and I guess it, maybe it was in 2000, he led the nation in saves. Coy Scott. Coy, welcome into the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Corey. What an honor. I remember the those teams very well, and of course, one of your teammates is a coach now currently with the starting out. Can you talk about how did you come to East Carolina? Why did you become a Pirate?
So I grew up in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, and East Carolina was always on my radar coming out of high school. I was very fortunate to be able to get drafted by the Orioles and came to Greenville under George Whitfield at Pitt Community College. Really fell in love with the area, fell in love with the Pirates, and was given the opportunity to play for Coach Sinclair in 1998 to 2000, and it was really the most special time of my life. And, you know, I came here in 1995, and as you guys know, I'm still here. So I bleed purple and gold, and it's something that will always stick in with me.
Now, Corey, in terms of your recruitment with Coach LeClaire, can you kind of give us a glimpse behind the curtain, so to speak, and what was Coach LeClaire like?
Coach LeClaire was like a dad to all of us. You know, he truly took us in as his sons and his kids, and he treated us like we were supposed to be treated. He treated us like young men. He treated us the way that he felt the good Lord wanted us to be treated, and the way that we should treat other people that are around us. You know, if you ever go into Coach Godwin's office now, where there's a wall of all Americans on there, and I'm very fortunate to be up there. However, the reason I'm telling you this is because if you notice during Coach Sinclair's era, we're the only team, the only players that do not have a hat on. And, a lot of people, you know, go in there and take a picture of me and laugh because, you know, I had a lot of hair. And, you know, Coach Sinclair, every single player on that wall has a hat on except for Coach Sinclair's hair, and that's because we were inside taking pictures and Coach Sinclair would not let us wear a hat on the inside. So that just tells you the kind of person he was and what he instilled in all of us.
Corey, I remember the teams very well from those teams were very talented from top to bottom of the order. Pitching, you had it all there. Can you talk about what made you guys so special?
Our bond. You know, Coach Sinclair brought us in and made us feel like we were all brothers, and we treated each other that way. And there was nothing that we would do for our teammates that we would rather not do for ourselves. You know, we always hung out. We always went out together. We always did everything we did was together. And that's what really, really made us special. You know, I'd 100% give credit of all of my success to the team that we had. I mean, when you step on a mound and you got Chad Tracy and Lee Delfino and Nick Schnabel and Eric Backich and Cliff Godwin, you know, James Molinari, Steve Salargo, you know, John Williamson, Hall of Fame John Williamson, you know, Joe Hastings, all these guys, it's not very hard to pitch. You know, you just get up there and you throw strikes because you know that they're going to make a play behind you. And I give all of my success to the teams that Coach Sinclair put together and everything that he instilled in us. And, you know, I still to this day think of all those guys as my brothers and love them to death.
How close are you guys? Are you guys still close today?
Very close. You're very close. A lot of us still talk all the time. You know, I text with CG some. I try not to bother him too much during the season. But, you know, we always keep in touch. Jeremy Schumacher's one of my really close brothers that I really, really bonded with a lot at East Carolina. And, you know, with all the success of all the coaches, with Eric Backich and Nick Schnabel, and Joe Hastings is a professional scout now. And, you know, I'm actually having lunch with Justin Hyde on Friday. So, yes, we all still stay connected, and we try to do everything. Every time Coach has a, you know, in the fall we'll have a reunion or whatever, we all try to make it back. You know, it's always good to hang out with each other. And, you know, all these years, which it's hard to say. It was 19 years ago now, but we're still like it was 19 years ago when we get together. We don't miss a beat.
Corey, with the Pirates hosting this weekend, this is the first time East Carolina's ever hosted in consecutive years, which is kind of hard to believe, but it's almost like an asterisk should be by that because, like I referenced a little bit earlier, you guys had number one seeds in 99 and 2000, and then the year after you left, of course, we did host. So that would have been three consecutive years that we would have hosted had we had the ballpark or submitted a bid to host in Wilson or Kinston in 99 and 2000. But just talk about that experience. And I know in 99, you guys had to go on the road down to Baton Rouge, and LSU was pretty much the college baseball team of the 90s under Skip Bertman, the old Alex Box, the Blake Street Bombers. So talk about what it was like to go play college baseball's most storied program in the 90s.
Well, it was quite the experience. However, the guys that we sent down there in 1999 as the number one seed, we were a number one seed for a reason, and we believed it. You know, we went down there knowing that we could win and really knowing that we had just as good a chance as anybody in the country to go to Omaha and win a national championship. We really believed in each other. You know, we just unfortunately we came up a little short. We did beat LSU the first time we played them, 11-10, and we came back and lost, you know, by one run, and then we ended up losing 11 or 12 to nothing. I can't remember quite the score right now, but the experience to go down to Alex Box Stadium and play in front of Skip Bertman and you know, when you think about it, coming through high school and, you know, LSU is all over the TV because they hit so many home runs all those years, and you know, they got a stadium down there with 10,000 people. But little did we know that we were going to play for the most legendary coach of all time with Coach Eclair. And, you know, just the opportunity that we had to go down and be the number one seed and represent East Carolina at LSU and in 2000 at Louisiana Lafayette. You know, we truly feel that we had just as much chance to win the national championship and be just as much as they were in the little town of Greenville in East Carolina. Unfortunately, we didn't have the stadium back then to be able to host. But as you see now, we have one of the best in the country, and we feel very, very proud that we're a part of it.
Corey, I had a question as far as that being a regional, and you guys set the bar, the standard, in my opinion, for this program. And now you have the head coach who was a part of that legacy, if you will. Can you talk about the difference it would have made? I know I'm not getting into speculation, hypotheticals, but how big a difference does it make for being a number one seed, having to go on the road versus you could have had a safety hack Clark LeClair Stadium a few years earlier?
Well, guys, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir when I tell you this. Everybody knows this, and I'm not just talking about the people in Greenville, but people all over this state know that East Carolina has the best fans, you know, in all of our sports. We have a good backing, and people really care about our Pirates and care about our programs. And had we had a number one seed and we had Clark LeClair Stadium, you know, history may have been a little different. Our trip to Omaha would have probably already happened. However, you know, Cliff has got us on the right in the right path in the right direction. He's a great leader. He learned from a great leader, and, you know, I'm really, really excited about this coming up weekend. I'm excited about next weekend, Super Regional, and I'm excited about my trip to Omaha, first time we're going to go.
So you're like me. Bubba and I were talking about my wife. I haven't even discussed it yet because I'm so afraid I'm going to jinx it. You're afraid. I'm afraid that if I say, baby, can I go to Omaha, it's actually our anniversary on the 22nd, that Saturday. So I'm a little bit nervous about breaking the news, or maybe she could go. But you're very confident we're going to Omaha this year?
Very confident that we are. I think Cliff's got us on the right path. Our boys are really playing hard. Came up a little short in the conference tournament, but, you know, Wichita State just has our number this year. However, I think the boys are regrouped. I think they're ready. And I think it's going to be a little extra spark with that NC State rivalry coming into town. especially with the comments that Coach A even said, you know, that everyone has said, everyone's heard him say, you know, East Carolina's is going to be ready for them when they get here. So I'm really excited about it. There's nothing in this world that's going to keep me from going to Omaha. I coach Greenville Little League here in town, and, you know, All-Stars is going to be around that time. It always is, because our Little League program is so good, and we always go deep into the summer with our All-Stars. But all of my parents know if I'm coaching that team, and then we go to Omaha, I'm catching the first flight.
How to pick Greenville, right? What about what do you think? You've been there, the regionals, obviously, and all that. What do you think it's going to take for us to get the monkey off our back?
Boys are just going to have to play hard. I think one of the biggest things that they're really, really going to have to do is they're going to have to believe in themselves. They're going to have to believe that they can do it and they can win. You know, we've done it all year long. They've played hard. They've played great. I think it's a really, really close-knit team. It kind of reminds me of our teams in 99 and 2000 where we were so close to each other and really cared about each other. And I feel, you know, every time I've gone to the ballpark this year, which has been a lot, almost every game, I try to make it to, you know, you can really see the relationship between the players is really, really tight, you know, with our seniors and the guys and juniors that are really, really good, you know, and they make our freshmen very well, our sophomores picking it up. You know, I really just feel like they need to just believe that they can do it, go out there and play as hard as they can play. And, you know, when they walk out of that dugout and they go in between those white lines, they need to give it all they got. And I truly believe they will, and I think that they're going to come out on top.
Is it a possibility that maybe they're trying to do too much, or because they're so successful and knowing what's at stake as far as Omaha, is it possible to put too much pressure or try to do too much? It seems like those guys joke around so much. Maybe it'd be best to go out there as loose as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being a number one seed is going to put a monkey on your back. You know, everybody wants to beat the best. And when you're a number one seed, guess what? You're the best. And, you know, we're going to have to go out with a lot of confidence, a lot of suave, and just do what we can do. You know, I think if we go out and believe that we can do it, I think Cliff's going to have them in the right mindset. And I think it's going to be a fun weekend for the Pirate fans and the Pirate baseball team.
No worry about it. Go ahead, Bubba. Sorry.
Corey, like I referenced earlier on in the Open, in 2000, you led the nation in saves with 22. I'm not sure what the current record is, but I know that was just one off of the all-time saves record in the nation. So talk a little bit about the mindset that it takes to be a closer.
Well, I don't know if you saw the baseball speech from a couple of years ago, but you know,
I did. I was going to bring that up as well.
Yeah, I really didn't want to even be the closer, but Coach DeClaire knew the big picture. And, you know, I was 4-0 with 22 saves going into the conference title championship, and I actually blew the save that year. And, you know, our team came back in the bottom of the ninth and ended up winning the conference title, and that I was 5-0 with 22 saves. And just to tell you a little bit about how much the kids, these guys, and our team really meant to each other, James Molinari, you know, had one of the best sayings of my life, of anybody that could ever say anything about me, is in the newspaper that day, the next day, James Molinari said, "Corey saved us 22 times this year. It's about time we saved him." You know, and that really, really meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to our program. It meant a lot to our players and our team. And just showed you how close we were. You know, my success, I can always say that, you know, 5-0 with 22 saves. I'm a first-team All-American. But I give all 100% of my success to the teams that we had and Coach DeClaire and our staff and just all the belief that they had in me. You know, to go down, and I remember every time we would get up 3-2 or 4-2 or any type of save situation, I would tell our guys to stop scoring, you know, so I could go out there and pitch, because I didn't get to pitch if we didn't weren't in a save situation, and I always wanted to be on the field. So you know, that was a joke, you know, running joke in between our guys is, you know, we can't score anymore, so Corey gets to play today.
Now, what is a is there a certain memory that stands out the most as far as like this time of year? I know we've been talking a lot about regionals and all that. What stands out for you?
Opportunity to play, opportunity to be able to go out and do something that some people just can't do. That's what stands out to me the most. You know, I coach 9 and 10, 11, 12-year-old kids right now, and I try to instill into them every single day how fortunate they are to be able to put on a glove, put on cleats, you know, to swing a bat, to catch a ball, to go out in the sun, you know, just to be a kid and be able to live and do something that truly means a lot to other people that they really take for granted a lot. So, you know, the thing that stands out to me the most, it's just the opportunity to be a Pirate, the opportunity to be able to play, and the opportunity to go and watch one of my brothers coach our team. You know, I feel a lot of pride every time I go to the ball field and see Cliff out there wearing that number 23. It really means a lot. And, you know, it's not about winning and losing. Well, it's not all about winning and losing. It's a lot about winning and never losing. But it's about the opportunity to be able to do things that just a lot of people can't do. And, you know, I thank God for that every single day.
Mm-hmm. Corey, you talk about going out there and seeing your brother Cliff Godwin in that third base coach's box wearing 23. Talk about what it meant to you for him to ask you to be the keynote speaker at the baseball banquet, I guess it was in 2018.
Yeah. Well, it meant the world to me. You know, I'm a big guy, you know, kind of think I'm tough, but I wear a lot on my sleeve, and, you know, I cry a lot. So Cliff asked me to be a speaker over there, and, you know, it truly meant a lot to me. You know, and Cliff told me, he said, I want you to go out there and I want you to give it all. I want you to tell them it all. And, you know, I went out there and I wrote that speech. It probably took me 4 or 5 weeks of writing and thinking about just things that I wanted to say and things I wanted to the kids to be able to hear and the trials and tribulations that I went through and, you know, the ups and the downs and the adversity I had to overcome to be able to sit and say that I'm, you know, was able to become a first-team All-American and be a Pirate. You know, it's not always just wake up and go out and do what you can do, you know, and life is going to be like that. It's not always just fun and games and smiles and laughs. You know, there's a lot of downtime, a lot of cries, a lot of adversity you got to come through. And, you know, it really, really, truly meant the world to me when Cliff asked me to do that speech. You know, I had a lot of opportunities to do some successful things here at East Carolina. And I'll tell you, you know, one man that really means a lot to me, came up to me after my speech. You know, he had a stroke 10 days before, and rest his soul, he passed away. But Walter Williams came up to me and said, you're one of my favorite Pirates of all time, you know, and you can give me all the accolades and trophies and, you know, whatever else you want to give me. That means the world to me when a true historian Pirate comes up to you and tells you that. It goes a long way. It means a lot.
Very much so. Very much so. I wanted to ask, read last night on hoistthecolors.net, our good friend Steven Igo, when you talk about number 23, about how tough he is, and I love him because anytime, and I know you're cut from the same cloth like me and Bubba, anytime, anywhere, any place, we'll play you, unlike some teams in Raleigh. But anyway, they have to now. But yeah, as far as number 23 goes, I read that I didn't know that he had a torn ACL, and he's been dealing with it for some time. Any other coach may say, guys, I got to take some time off to get this knee, but he's fighting in there and coaching third base, and I know he pitches batting practice, and it's just amazing to me that that says a lot about a coach when they have a torn ACL and they're still out there coaching.
Cliff's the toughest guy I know. You know, he's always been that way. He's hard-nosed. He's tough. He's mean. People don't know, but he's mean. But I tell you, he truly, truly, truly loves to wear East Carolina on his chest and on his back. and that number 23 probably, you know, means the world to all of us, you know, and Cliff's not going to let a knee or anything else. It never has, you know. He's always played with injuries. He's always given it everything he has. You know, we've had some teammates before that, you know, just because they felt like they were going to the next level, kind of told us that they were hurt or gave up on us, but you'll never, ever see that in Cliff. Cliff's going to fight till the end, and it doesn't matter if he's walking out there on crutches. He's going to be in that third base box no matter what. And I think that that's why the guys respond to him so much and so well, and I truly, truly believe that that's why we're going in the right direction and our flight to Omaha is going to be packed.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about Coach, he's definitely so you talk about one thing while we had you on, we had a Keith LeClair special back during that time a few months ago. Can you talk about, you're talking about adversity. I thought the world of the man, loved him to death personally and professionally. I didn't realize how far we could go. But as soon as he sat down and did, I think, the first public interview on with Henry Hinton back in the day, I'll never forget it. Denny's on Memorial Drive. He talked about Omaha, and you believed it. How hard was it to go see him go through what he did when you're talking about one of the greatest Pirates. He's one of my ECU heroes, if you will.
And I'm sorry, I missed who you were talking about at first. Who were you asking about?
Keith LeClair.
Oh, well, there's not enough words, guys, to describe who he is and what he was as a man and as a person. You know, when you talk about someone that has an impact on a lot of people and an impact on an entire country, when you talk about college baseball, you know, Jim Valvano comes to mind, you know, how much of an impact he had and what he's done and all of the things that have come from Jim Valvano. You know, Coach LeClair and him are probably sitting right there beside each other, just patting each other on the back because they have impacted so many lives and done so much good for the disease and everything that needs to be known about it. You know, Coach LeClair is a true, true hero when you talk about heroes. So, you know, we just had Memorial Day on Monday. And, you know, you wake up and say a prayer for everyone and fight for our freedom. Coach LeClair, you know, there's not a day that goes by to think about him, talk about him, ask about him. You know, I'm sitting in my office right now at work, moving the bank, and I got number 23 on my wall to my left. I got number 23 on my wall to my right. You know, I got East Carolina right in front of me. It truly, truly means Coach LeClair.
He's one of the best. And this weekend, so you see us obviously winning the regional, and obviously the weather hopefully will hold out and be good, right?
Right. Yeah, I hope so. I hope we get to play. I hope NC State beats Campbell so we can just take it to NC State and let them know that we're for real.
That would be great. Well, Corey, thank you so much for being with us. It's a huge honor to have you, and I know there's a lot of Pirate fans that want to know where the guys have gone, and I know you posted the program, but it's great catching up with you, and hopefully we can have you back on with the Super Regionals will be on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for thinking of me, you know, and go Pirates.
Thank you very much, Corey. Appreciate you, buddy, and all the Pirate players. We've got a lot of them lined up, and we've got some already ready to go, so that we pre-recorded because we knew this week was going to be kind of crazy, so we're trying to stay a little bit ahead. And I know, Bubba, we've got another great guest. I can't wait to talk to him.
Yeah, Trent Britt, like I mentioned in the open, he owns and operates Next Level Training Center, which is off of Wimbledon Drive, which is just off of Arlington, not too far from the mall. But Trent does an excellent job, and a lot of awfully good baseball players and other athletes have come through or gone through that facility. And so I mean, Trent's the guy that I got to know several years ago, I guess back right after Clark LeClair opened. It was my first run in with Trent, just talking to Trent out in the jungle, and didn't really necessarily know each other, but just kind of acquaintances and that kind of thing, just talking Pirate baseball while we were watching it. And he's someone I could tell was just extremely knowledgeable, both about Pirate athletics, but then also, as you'll hear in this interview, just about like more like biomechanical aspects of things and just how things are done. So let's go to that interview right now with Trent Britt.
Well, it's baseball season, and a guy that I know, Bubba, that knows a lot about baseball, 24/7, 365, right?
Oh, no doubt about it. Very excited to have with us a guy that's an extremely loyal supporter of East Carolina Athletics and also the owner of Next Level Training Center in Greenville, Trent Britt. Trent, welcome in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Trent, very much. Very excited. That's one of the things about the podcast is you think you know a lot about Greenville, and I don't know why I didn't know about you guys, but now we do. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast.
Well, I appreciate it, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. We try to get the word out, but if you've got one coming up, then you'll hear about it soon enough.
No doubt about it. He's 6 years old, and I love his determination, and I know that the same thing with Bubba with Riley was a year older. In fact, we joked the only way that Riley and Alexander will be on the same team is if they play for East Carolina.
Well, I would encourage you guys. That's an awesome age, man, and it's a phenomenal ride, and I get to do it with other people's kids now at all ages, but I'd give anything to be able to go back with my own and just do it again because it's a great ride.
Can you tell
Trent,
folks?
Go ahead, Dave.
I'm sorry, Bob. I was just going to ask, Trent, can you tell us about Next Level? Can you tell us about what you guys do and give people an idea?
Yeah, so it's our mission, if you will, we're an indoor training facility. We're really blessed to have what we think is the largest facility east of Greensboro, but we don't really talk about the size of it, more just what we offer. But our mission is basically to just have provide a first-class training environment where we're dedicated to the continual development of baseball and softball players of all ages and abilities. So we've got everything that you could imagine from a member perspective that would allow somebody to come in and regardless of weather, be able to train. And when I say that, we're very passionate about not wanting kids to be, specialized in an early age. So what I tell people all the time is there's nothing wrong, and we want people to play, play other sports. But then while you're playing those, if you want to come in a day or two with your week, with your dad and get swings in, or, we'll work on your fielding technique, or just get reps in, or just come in and enjoy the game, then that's what we're here for. So it's a member-based facility. We've got a very, very large following, and we've got around 1,000 members. And then as far as our services, and membership just gives you the ability to be in here for the amount of time we're open every day. We open at 6 in the morning, and we're here till 9 at night. And during that time, we've got everybody from EC youth players and PCC's players to the EC club team. They're all members, all the way down to, a heavy percentage of the Greenville Little League kids, middle school players, certainly the kids at Rose and Conley and South Central and Aiden and North Pitt and Farmville come in as well. So that's kind of a quick rundown, and we got cages, we've got a full infield, we've got mounds, we put a heavy premium on the physical development piece, and then we have a whole other side of business that's the services that we offer that's separate from membership. So those are, everything from private instruction and our clinics and our camps to physical development with our strength and speed classes.
Trent, I was going to ask you, being that it's summertime, do you guys know that Coach Godwin has a camp? We're going to try to get Alex there. Are you you guys have any like summer camps or baseball camps, or is that not what you?
Yeah, we absolutely do. So we operate though kind of the opposite of what you may think up front. We are busiest when the weather is coldest and darkest. So
right.
The nicer the weather gets, the slower we begin to get with our traffic and with our clinics, because honestly, we want people to be outside. I mean, baseball is played outside, so. The majority of our camps and clinics run in the late fall and then all winter and then early spring when the weather's still, too bad for people to be outside. So we are running a few clinics. We always run stuff the first 2 weeks the kids are out of school, so that way we don't conflict with what ECU or PCC are doing, and we don't conflict with the all-star situations, because a lot of the all-star teams in these various leagues practice two or three times a day. And I coached that for 10 years in Greenville. And so I know the schedule. And so we try to kind of go dark, if you will, for the back half of the summer once the season's kind of over. So our clinics that we do have coming up are actually already sold out. At the younger ages, we have a 7- and 8-year-old series of clinics we run, and then a 9- through 12-year-old. And then that's pretty much all we've got. So we kind of shift our focus once the summer gets here to kind of just private lessons and member usage. And then we resume all of our physical training classes because we have so many of our college athletes home. And so college, high school, middle school, and then down to 9 years old, we have different classes we run to help with their, you know, their stability, their speed, their acceleration, their running technique, their strength, those types of things. And that's kind of where we begin to put emphasis in the summertime, kind of beginning to get them ready for next season.
First, let me say, Trent, your thoughts and your belief as far as not specializing at an early age, that's something that I wholeheartedly agree with as a former high school and college athlete, and just thinking back to my experiences growing up and now as a father of a 7- and 4-year-old, that's what I really, really discourage kids from specializing. Play everything you can. And you see it far too much, kids getting burnt out and that sort of thing.
Well, no, it's honestly, Bubba, it's an epidemic. If we don't get the word out, meaning any of us that know better, then shame on us, because you know, I tell people all the time, I don't arrive at my conclusions or thoughts just based on what I think. We've had hundreds of athletes come from out of just this building on college scholarships. I had a son that played collegiately for 4 years at the Division I level and then got drafted twice and played professionally. I've got, you know, in any given year, always 15 to 20 kids that, you know, whether it's Bryant Packard who grew up in here, or whether it's kids we've got going off to play at Towson or NC State or wherever we've got them going next year. And the thing that they all have in common when you look back at them is that they're athletes first. And if you ask Coach Godwin, if you ask Coach Scaff, if you ask Coach Avent or Fox or any of the guys, Coach Pollard at Duke, you know, they will tell you they want athletes. And unfortunately, you don't become athletic by going and standing on a travel ball field for 5 games over 2 days while you're just standing there. You know, you don't learn how to move laterally. You don't learn how to jump. You don't know how to learn to use your body or explode. And that used to happen, you know, at a much older age. Now you've got this stuff beginning at 7 and 8 years old. And you're right, it's an epidemic. And when you combine that with the fact that my generation, when we got off the bus after school, got off the bus, immediately started playing outside whatever season it was and played pickup games until we got called in for dinner. And that doesn't go on anymore. And more importantly, nobody jumps fences and climbs trees anymore. So, you know, you when you begin to just make every time you throw something only be from a mound, or any time you're moving only be the few times you run to first in a baseball game, all of a sudden we get kids that just don't move well, aren't injury-proof, only throw from one angle, and none of that's positive, none of it. So we really try, particularly with the kids we get that we see with extreme talent, to encourage them, please play basketball. Please play football, even if it's flag. I don't care. Just go move so that, you know, you're not just a first baseman or just a catcher, because at 7, that's what your dad comes in and says. He goes, hey, my son's a catcher. You know, we always say, no, your son's a baseball player. He's not a catcher yet. He's 7. You know, let's let his body kind of figure out what it wants to do. So we really, really try to preach that. We try to do that with what we offer. And, you know, yeah, it has become an epidemic, though, and I hear it and see it when I go to conferences, when we go to coaches' conventions, you know, coaches just begging for athletes.
And a lot of the times, I mean, it's parents who are well-intended, they're just ignorant, and they don't understand some of the ramifications, like as far as being more prone to injury and those sorts of things that they're subjecting their child to.
No doubt, and there's data. I mean, I could bore you with study after study that shows the correlation between early sports specialization and injuries. The injury rates are just remarkably higher for kids that only play one sport. Doesn't matter the sport. It could be just swimming. You know, you look at shoulder injuries among people that just swim, or knee injuries upon people that just play soccer. I could go on and on. It's, you know, it's not debatable, and it's luckily – you know, among the community of people that maybe aren't going through it for the first time, this is known. But you're right, the danger is apparent that simply thinks more is better. And we tell people all the time, you know, better is better, more is not better. And it doesn't matter, you know, you can take too many swings, you can throw too many pitches, you can play soccer too many months of the year. I mean, you got injury rates, you have burnout, you know, you have the simple fact that kids just begin to not learn to move properly because they're only moving in one direction and they're not going in all three planes of movement because their sport doesn't require it. So it's, yeah, there's the more is better piece is hard because parents don't mean it. They just accidentally fall prey to it. And the keeping up with the Joneses factor as well. What everybody else is doing, and I feel like my kid's falling behind. So,
you know, Trent, when,
go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
I want to add to that. I'm so happy to hear you say that and other people that are professionals because I'm not. But I grew up in a town 45 minutes north of here in Williamston, North Carolina. A very small 1A school. We had no choice. If you're a kid, you're playing a sport. you were looked down upon pretty much if you didn't play a sport. And a lot of the guys were playing two, three sports. And so that's the way I grew up. And I'm glad to hear there's science to prove that I would much rather have, and you hear that all the time, with even the professional level, people are looking for athletes first. And I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, well, we, you know, even when I was coaching at the youngest level within Greenville Little Leagues, I'll be honest with you, I coached Jarman Auto Sales for 10 years, and we had a great run. And if you live in Greenville and you follow Greenville Little Leagues, you know that Jarman is kind of one of the flag bearing programs, if you will, in terms of the success they've had. And yet it never was lost on me. We're dealing with total children, total kids, right? And when the season was over, honestly, I was exhausted. I was as a coach. When my son played for us, he was tired. It was time to move on in August to something else. And what I would always tell the kids is, hey, I don't want to see you again until next March, but please make sure when I see you next March that you're bigger, faster, stronger, more agile, and more coordinated. And I'll take care of the baseball piece from March through August. We'll get after it 7 days a week. We'll have a blast, but please come back a better athlete. And, you know, it really was one of the keys to our success because I didn't want them, if they wanted to play fall baseball because they just loved it and they weren't going to be playing anything else, fine. Go play travel ball, fall ball, I don't care. As long as you're not doing it because you think it's giving you some huge advantage, I'd rather you play football. I'd rather you play soccer or basketball, and I'll see you in March. So I've lived that, and I know for my own son it was a part of his success because up through eighth grade, at least he played everything. And then in ninth grade, it became pretty apparent, hey, he's a little different. He's a little more talented. And now we're going to begin to focus in a little bit more on baseball because he wanted to. And honestly, he was already beginning to get attention at that time, you know, that told me, hey, he's a little different. So, you know, that's when the fall became a little more important baseball-wise. But I know even for him, you know, I learned through going through that intuitively I knew being a better athlete would help him be a better baseball player. But we honestly were just tired. We were ready to be done. When it got football season, he didn't want to be on a baseball field. He wanted to be on a football field. So that's where we were.
Something I wanted to ask you, Trent, before we move on and talk about this year's Pirates.
Yes.
And this weekend's Greenville Regional. I know guys like Alex White, Lonnie Chisenhall, Kevin Brandt, to name a few that are recognizable. And then I know there are certainly others. And can you talk about some of those that have come through your facility, like you already mentioned Bryant Packard, but then also talk a little bit about your staff, because I know you have an excellent staff.
Yeah, we really are. I'll start with the staff first, just because we really are blessed to have some great folks here. The guys that we've got here all are former college players and or have significant coaching experience and or play professionally. So, you know, you've got an Eric Lovett, for example, that, you know, played at Southern Wayne High School and then went on to Mount Olive, where he was the national player of the year at the Division II level. And then again was drafted twice, second time by the Yankees, and went on to play professional baseball. But we've got guys like that. We've got other guys like Ben Fox, who's the current coach of the East Carolina club baseball team. We're really coaching is more his passion, and that's kind of what he's always done. But our staff, we've got 9 instructors. We have 7 for baseball, and we have 2 for softball. And that rotates from time to time. We've had a couple of folks that were just tremendous that moved away. But we do everything here from hitting and fielding to pitching. And our staff, for the most part, is very experienced as playing, but also I really require the ability to teach well before I want someone working here. So it's not just enough for someone to tell me what a great player they were. They need to be able to teach, because doing and teaching are two different things. So Everyone here is kind of accomplished on all fronts. Some of them have coached at the collegiate level. Some of them have coached at the American Legion level, but all of them played and had successful playing careers. People that have come through here, yeah, we've been really blessed that particularly over the last few years, we're starting to see kids that kind of started here at 9 or 10 years old, and then they're moving on to college or the professional level. But Alex was actually here. A couple of funny things about Alex. Alex was here working out with Lonnie the winter before both of them got called up to the majors. So they actually would come in here about 10 o'clock every morning and throw the football to warm their arms up. Actually, Alex would throw the football to warm his arm up, and Lonnie would run pass patterns to get his quote-unquote cardio in for his conditioning when they were in AAA, and they ended up getting called up to the majors that same season, which was pretty awesome. But we've had, you know, Mike Wright, Sean Armstrong, Chase McDonald. I mentioned my son Dalton. Tanner Duncan from the club team was a cool story. You know, Andrew Kane, Tanner Biagini, some names you may recognize that were local kids, you know, that kind of worked out here or came up through here. Now, not all of those kids grew up in here, but a lot of them did work out here. And it's just fun to watch the progression, whether it's trying to get from low A to the big leagues or whether it's, you know, being a, you know, a Winterville little leaguer and trying to get to, you know, make get started on your high school team. That's kind of what the place is all about, and it's fun to watch that.
Trent, I wanted to ask you about as far as being, again, that my son Alexander and Riley, Bubba's son, they're 6 and 7 years old. How young do you start a kid as far as training? We want to make sure he and I both are passionate. Our boys are passionate right now about sports. We're trying to find that fine line of where they work really hard, but we don't want to push them like being a baseball dad.
No, I'm so happy that you say that, because one of the greatest challenges that I've got is trying to get, like we talked about earlier, people to understand more is not always better. And honestly, the best way for kids to learn is for kids to do and kids to play. And so if I had my way, we would never do any type of formal instruction before at least the age of 9 or 10 years old. And that would only be in situations where we felt like, you know, they just don't have someone to spend time with them at home. Because what we'd far rather do is just spend a few minutes. If their member's in here and you're coming in with your son and your son's 9, he's struggling with something, and say, hey, here's some things you can work on with him, and just let him work on those things rather than feeling the need to start private instruction as young as possible. And I tell parents that all the time, because we get 6 and 7 year old parents calling all the time. And we started offering clinics maybe once a month, once every other month for that age, in order to discourage parents from feeling like that they needed to get private instruction. Because, again, when they're that age, when they're your son's age, they need to be in the yard swinging a wiffle ball bat, hitting pine cones. I used to, you know, on the weekend, I'd get an adult beverage and I'd sit back in a recliner and I'd ball sheets of paper up and pitching my son all day long with a wiffle ball bat in the house. And he'd take 100 swings while I was watching games, just throwing balled up sheets of paper at him, just because he loved it and he wanted to swing. But you know, anything you can do in the yard with them, the more they play, the better. And as long as they're enjoying it, you know, that's really the biggest thing. And I don't think there's an age that's too young or too old. I just think for us, we don't feel like it's necessary for them to be in some formal training program, you know, when they're 6 and 7 and 8 years old.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Trent, taking a look at this weekend's Greenville Regional, obviously, yeah, you have three in-state programs and obviously the Pirates, but then the Wolfpack and Camels, and those clubs have played this year with the exception of ECU and NC State. They have not met. So what are your thoughts on the regional as a whole, and then we'll maybe go a little bit deeper into things?
Well, I think it's going to be an awful lot of fun, right? I mean, I think all of us that follow East Carolina, I know at least I was, after the way that things went down last year at the end of the season with not playing that game with NC State and maybe feeling like there was a little bit of gamesmanship involved in all of that. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it, in my opinion, that State just didn't really want to play that game or see it necessary. But I kind of thought it might be a little bit of sweet justice for them to be forced to come here. But be careful what you ask for, because they're really good. And, you know, certain points of this season, you know, there were points in the year where they were, you know, inside the top five and even sitting in the, you know, the 2 or 3 spot nationally. So they've got a lot of talent. We had a kid from here, Hunter Christopher, that played at Rose that was on that team this year. So I followed State super closely. And, you know, my thoughts are that, you know, that State and Campbell are both really quality. I think Campbell, with the junior college, you know, experience they've got, they may be the oldest team here in terms of experience and number of guys that are over 20. Quinnipiac, I don't know as much about. I'm very familiar with the conference and with the league. And obviously we've played some teams out of that league, and I've followed that league in the past. I've kind of been looking at their schedule. They obviously had some opponents like Greensboro and Wake Forest and some others I'm very familiar with. But, you know, it looks like a situation where hopefully East Carolina takes care of business on Friday, which they're supposed to do. And then State and Campbell would not surprise me at all, no matter what happens in that game, because Campbell's beaten State once this year already, and midweek or not, I think they believe they can beat them, and they're experienced. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
I was not surprised earlier this morning to see that Jake Kuchmaner is going to get the start on Friday as opposed to Agnes.
Yeah, me either. I think, you know, you've got to win the game you're playing. But I think that, you know, reality is that, you know, nothing against Quinnipiac, but from a pure talent level up and down the roster, they're not NC State or Campbell. And in my opinion, this is me saying this, not Cliff, Coach Godwin, but you know, if you're one of your weekend guys is not able to win that game and you're trying to play to win the entire tournament, I have no problem with that at all. You know, I trust Jake to go out and throw a great game, and Jake needs to be good enough to get us a win on Friday, and then that sets things up pretty well for Saturday. And then even after we win Saturday, we're going to have to win again on Sunday. So clearly, I mean, Agnos has got next level stuff, and if he's on, he's the most electric guy. So I'm not surprised, and honestly, it's I think it's a compliment to Quinnipiac that, you know, that Kuchmaner, who's an elite pitcher, is getting the ball against them. I mean, it just shows they're not being overlooked, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
And everybody's good this time of year. I mean, everybody in this tournament is good. So.
Right. That's one of the things we talked about with Corey Glore when we had him on earlier in the week on Selection Monday. That's what Corey was just talking about. You're either good because you have a tremendous body of – you're either in the tournament because you have a tremendous body of work for the entire season, or that you got hot at the right time and you're playing your best baseball now and won your conference tournament.
No doubt. And, you know, and we all know, I mean, I know it's cliche, but, you know, records don't matter. If anybody thinks Quinnipiac gives a rip what East Carolina's record is, then they're wrong. I mean, they're coming here, you know, with nothing to lose in their minds and saying, hey, we're going to go upset the number one seed. And they may be thinking about tomorrow, but we're not. And, again, all of us that have followed baseball over the years, we know every week during the season on Tuesdays and Wednesdays you see scores that make you scratch your head, but we all understand it's baseball. I mean, there's so many things that go into it, and you know, you could play a perfect game and get beat because you hit every ball at somebody all night, you know, or you don't throw strikes, but they do, or something fluky happens. And so, yeah, every team that has figured out a way to string together three or four wins in a conference tournament and get here, or had a regular season worthy of being here, you know, by definition, they're good, and probably have a lot of internal confidence as well. And so I don't doubt for one second that Campbell thinks they can beat State tomorrow, and I don't doubt that Quinnipiac's going to come in and throw everything they've got at East Carolina and say, hey, let's see what we can do with nothing to lose.
Oh, I totally agree. When we actually caught up with Quinnipiac head coach, and he had played for them back in the early or mid-2000s, and I think maybe hit a couple home runs at Clark LeClaire.
Nice. I didn't know that, but that's well, there you go. I'm sure he'll tell them what a great hitter's park it is when it's hot. So.
Yeah, especially out the right field for sure. But hopefully not too many left-handed bats. But
just looking at it, you know what I'm curious about is, I think so often when you get into regional play, there's so many things pulling at these kids, and you just always wonder within a given dugout, doesn't matter the team, you know, how many guys are thinking about the draft, how many guys are tired, how many guys are going to be transferring 2 or 3 weeks after the season's over because they weren't playing as much as they wanted, you know, how bought in is everybody on still wanting to be here, how many guys are ready to get to their summer teams, you know, who's bitter because they didn't make the roster of the 27, you know, because not everybody can dress for the NCAA tournament. So I've just personally seen that be a huge factor as well in the NCAA tournament, and I don't know the answer to that. I have no idea with any of those four teams kind of, you know, is every guy in the dugout pulling the same direction and all in on wanting to continue their season, you know?
Oh, absolutely. That's an excellent point. And as you take a look at that, that's something I was going to say – the more I think about it, I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but I think that this is going to be more like 2016, with the exception it's going to be at home instead of on the road at UVA, where we had the 0-2 visit to Clearwater and in the conference tournament, and then we bounced back strong. I think we'll see something similar with the leadership we have.
Well, I'm trusting that, and you just nailed it. I mean, I trust Coach Godwin. I trust Coach Roselle and Coach Palumbo, and I trust Zach Womack, and I trust, you know, Pete. I trust everybody on that staff, that, you know, the team managers, that everybody wants to win this thing. And I had a chance privately to catch up with Bryant this week, just checking on his mother and her situation. And his father comes in here a lot during the week, and obviously Bryant's one of the leaders on this team, and going to need to play well, you know, just like Burleson and Spencer and Agnos and all the other guys that are capable of being really, really special when they're on. And he, you know, I got off the phone and thought, okay, he gets it. I mean, he gets it. They get it. And I trust, you know, our coaches, and I trust our junior and senior leaders to make sure these guys understand that they've got a legitimate chance to do something that we've all talked about since Keith LeClaire uttered it. And, you know, we could still host a Super. There's no doubt in my mind Indiana can end up upsetting Louisville in that region. I saw them play 2 weeks ago in person against Rutgers when they won the Big Ten championship. I was up in Indiana that weekend. It was last weekend, I'm sorry. And yeah, that team can hit. I mean, if they didn't lead the nation on home runs, they were up there. But, you know, we've got everything right in front of us. They got to just take care of it one game at a time, and hopefully they win three in a row. But, you know, Campbell's talented. NC State's obviously very talented. And so, you know, I trust this staff, and I trust our guys to be ready to play, and I hope that that'll be enough.
I definitely agree with your comment regarding the Hoosiers, because, you know, they've been solid probably, what, about the last 7 or 8 years or mm-hmm. more. They made at least one trip to Omaha, I know, before their coach left to go to Arizona State. And that's the thing. They've had, I guess, maybe like three coaches during that time period, and their success really hasn't dropped off.
Yeah, I was the game I was at, they hit 7 home runs. That was last Friday night in a game. So, I mean,
that's one of those things. Their RPI isn't what Louisville or some, and their resume overall isn't as good either. But at the same time, the Big Ten, even though it's improved, obviously doesn't allow their RPI to be where that of a Louisville or an ACC team is.
No doubt, and you know, you mentioned Louisville. I mean, look, they went 2-and-done at their tournament. So if we're going to be a little concerned about our guys, because we went, man, we didn't end the season probably playing quite as well the last week as we had other parts of the year. I mean, Louisville was 0-2. So I, you know, I'm going to be interested, obviously, to see all the regionals. I think for me, if I wasn't at the East Carolina region and I could pick one other, I think I'd like to be in Morgantown, because I got a feeling that's going to be a zoo with them not having hosted in, what, 64 years or something like that?
Oh, wow. I didn't
but, yeah, I think 1955 was the last time they hosted a regional, so I've got a feeling that's going to be electric in that park and a lot of fun. But all of them will be fun to follow, and, you know, we got to worry about Quinnipiac and any of the Camels or State. But I trust our staff, and I trust our guys, and I think they're going to come out and play really, really well.
Now, Trent, we appreciate you coming on, and you've been very generous with your time. But before we let you go, I know you've been a Pirate for an awfully long time. Are there one or two ECU baseball memories from down through the years that really stick out?
Oh, gosh. I think for me, yeah, I think I would have to, you know, when I think back, that Kinston Regional, Super Regional, I'm sorry, with Tennessee, probably the most heartbroken I've ever been, just because I really thought that team that year, just I thought we had something really special, and I knew we probably weren't the most talented team, particularly on the mound at that time, but I just remember just how passionate the East Carolina fans were tailgating in those lots, and how excited and how freaking good Chris Burke was, you know, came in hitting over 400 for Tennessee, and then he goes on to obviously do, you know, big things at the professional level. But that memory of that Super, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, guys, wasn't it Wilson Kinston that year? Wasn't that the order of it? We did the regional in Wilson and the Super in Kinston.
Yes, sir. Yeah, when we played the regional in Wilson at Fleming Stadium and took down UMBC, USS. That was a remarkable rain delay game where we came from behind in the late innings, and then we beat Winthrop in the championship. But like you, even though we. Sounds weird saying this, considering we went 0-2 and lost the Super Regional, but Yeah, and that Tennessee team was so loaded with like the Chris Burke, et cetera, and they jumped out to that huge lead. And then the way we came storming back, much like we did against USF, and that bomb that Chad Tracy hit to right field, just here we are 18 years later, and it still gives me chills.
My favorite college hitter of all time. I've told him that. Chad owns a facility similar to this now. He's got all girls, but he operates a facility just outside Charlotte. And we keep in touch. And besides my own son, as you guys can understand, Chad's my favorite college player of all time. And, yeah, I just think the reason I mentioned that one, and what I remember about that Wilson Regional, again, was just how dedicated and passionate our fans were, because it rained and it was delayed. And if I remember right, on that first Friday night, we didn't even throw a first pitch till well after 9 o'clock. And that place was loud and packed and nobody left. And I think for me, that's when I first got the bug of truly believing one day we're going to do this. You know, we're going to do this one day. We're really close. And I don't know. Ever since then, we've just been itching to get back, right? And I know we've been in some other – I was at the Super in Columbia against South Carolina. I was at the Super in Chapel Hill. But I think that was the year where I felt like, I kind of got the bug and believed we'd get it done.
No doubt. And Coach LeClaire made you feel like Omaha was possible. It seemed like to be more of a concept, and he brought it to reality when he stepped foot on campus in East Carolina.
Well, I'm pumped, and I can't wait to see what this year's club does. And we are definitely good enough. There's no question in my mind this team is good enough to be one of the final eight. Yeah, I believe that. It's just a matter of whether we can put it all together at the right time and play the way we played for a large part of the year the next two weekends. I mean, to me, it's that simple. I mean, and I just I can't wait to see it.
Well, Trent, before we let you go, appreciate the time. You've been generous. Can you tell folks how they can get in contact with you if they have a son or daughter, folks that want to train at your facility?
Yeah, absolutely. If you love baseball or you love softball and, you know, you like the ability to kind of get indoors whenever you wanted to work on it, just stop by and see us. We're at 1750 Wimbledon Drive, which connects Fire Tower Road and Arlington Boulevard. We're the only business on this road. Or you can call us at 252-756-NEXT, which is 6398. Or you can visit our website, which is nextleveltc.com, or just Google us. And we're on Twitter at Next Level Trent, and we're on Facebook. Just Google Next Level Training Center, and it'll send you our Facebook page as well. So love for you to stop by.
Love to see you very soon. And thank you, Trent, so much for your time, and we look forward to having you back on. And go Pirates.
No, yeah. Awesome. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Look forward to catching up with you this weekend.
All right. Go Pirates.
Thank you, Trent.
Thank y'all.
Bye-bye. Really get a chance. Really enjoyed listening to him and talk about baseball and his knowledge, Bubba. And I appreciate, again, wanted to say this right after the interview. Really enjoyed him because his honesty, how much he cares for kids, it was apparent. He is a parent, and he actually cares about it. In other words, it is a business what he's doing, but you can tell how much he loves the athletes. And he's doing what's in the best interest of the athletes and not listen to, sorry for saying this, folks, pushy parents, you know, that want to live their son's going to be the next Major League Baseball player, daughter's going to be a huge softball star. Loved hearing that. It was very refreshing coming from an expert, a professional like him. And Trent, from the bottom of my heart, you definitely made me feel great because I think I'm on the right track of, and so is Bubba. We just want our kids to have fun, to work hard at everything they do. And if they're not having fun, I'm not going to put them through sports or whatever it is.
Yeah, Trent, you can tell, is a sharp guy. He knows his stuff. As you said, he has his priorities in order. He obviously wants his business to be successful, but at the same time, he's not going to be dishonest with the young man or his parents or her parents because of the dollars. So that's good to know, and really enjoy catching up with Trent, and look forward to having him back on the show down the road.
It'll be a great time to have him back, and a lot of great guests, Bob. I want to give you publicly a great job and a pat on the back, an attaboy, kudos, because people don't realize it's not easy to – I try – very hard to book as much as I can, but I know that you took the lead on that. You took the reins, and man, you ran with it. So people wonder why we have great guests. Bubba and Kyle and I confer with each other, but Bubba took the lead on that and has done A+, 100%, a great job on that. So wanted to say that to you.
I appreciate it. I enjoy it. And it's one of those things that, yeah, there is a lot of time involved, but you do it because you love it. So, but as far as Trent goes, his son that he referenced in that interview, Dalton, he was a tremendous player at Liberty for the Flames, and then he also had a few years in the minor leagues.
I know a great player, and we, you know, it's sometimes maybe it's not the right fit, or maybe the Pirates, we unfortunately miss players, but, you know, I know that would have been amazing for Trent to see his son in a Pirate uniform, and he had a great time at Liberty, I know, and a great player, so it all worked out for him. Before we go, Bubba, do you have anything, parting thoughts on the game or anything?
I hope this is a game where the Pirates, obviously we're the superior team, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to win, so hopefully Cooch will be on his game like he has been, with the exception of one start this year, that being his most recent one down in Clearwater against Wichita State. There's no reason to think he's not going to come out and have an excellent outing tonight. Hopefully he will come out and maybe he'll go the distance and he'll let our bullpen be untaxed and they'll be fresh and ready to go for NC State or Campbell tomorrow, whomever we play.
I think Cooch is going to throw out of his, be pitching out of his mind. I think that you're going to see redemption as Steve and I go in our regional preview. Last time Cooch didn't have a great start, he threw really well after that, so I don't think you'll see two bad outings, two bad days at the office, so to speak. And I think you'll see the Pirates do extremely well, and that's what it's all about. Tell everybody,
yeah.
By the way, Bubba, where we can find this great podcast and social media.
I will. Yeah, really, the thing about this game tonight, hopefully the bats will be hot, and we'll get a nice lead early, and then that will allow Cooch to even go farther into the game with a comfortable lead, and maybe we can get that 8 or 9 innings out of him. But, yeah, you can follow us on social media, on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And then you can listen to the show, obviously, where you are right now, or if you want to try different platforms, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, you name it, you can probably find us there if they have podcasts.
I can't wait to find out what happens. And again, folks, don't forget tonight we have our very special extra innings. It's the regional, I guess, report after the game. So be ready for that. We'll try to release that as soon as possible. Hopefully we can be talking about a Pirates victory over Quinnipiac. The Bobcats will find out tonight. For Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.